Welcome back to The Daily Drum on WHUR, Sirius XM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2, and 98.3 FM. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher. Former Prince George's County Executive Rushron Baker is back in the political spotlight and now running for the highest office in Maryland. Baker wants to be governor and replace Republican Larry Hogan next year, who is term limited. But what might a Baker administration look like if he were to win? Well, tonight, we talked to Baker and his running mate, Montgomery County Councilmember Nancy Navarro. And also, we want to hear from you, the listeners, whether you know Mr. Baker or not, or Ms. Navarro or not. I'm sure they would like to answer your questions as well. Lines are open. Give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. I invite you to tweet me at HFisherWHUR or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Mr. Baker, Ms. Navarro, thank you both for joining the conversation.
Harold, thank you for having us.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much.
So, Mr. Baker, I first want to start with you extending, you know, our and my personal condolences on the loss of your wife. I know that it has been a long and difficult struggle during the last couple of years of her life. How are you doing? How are you holding up?
We're doing well. We're taking it one day at a time, and I certainly appreciate that. Over the years, you have always extended well wishes to the family and I, and given me the opportunity, quite honestly, to come on and talk about Alzheimer's and our, and our efforts to try and make sure that we raise funds and to eradicate this disease. But we're doing well and moving forward. So thank you.
Yeah, I must admit, I in all honesty, when the news came down, my heart did go out to you because, as you said, outside of the politics and the rough and tumble interactions that you and I have had on this program, I really did, feel, for you. And we did have some very, very, sincere, conversations about that. And so certainly our condolences to you and your family as you move through this period.
Thank you so much.
Let us talk also about the passing of an icon, General Colin Powell, Secretary of State Colin Powell, Chair of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Colin Powell, National Security Advisor Colin Powell, statesman, gentleman Colin Powell. Your reaction to his loss today?
I feel like one of my family members passed away. Quite honestly, as you know, I grew up in a military family. My dad did 30 years in the military. Mm-hmm. I served in the military myself. But when it came to General Powell, my dad was actually in Vietnam at the same time that he was there. My dad did two tours. He was a Green Beret. But he remembered a very young lieutenant coming over to Vietnam, but never thought he would rise to the ranks of becoming Joint Chief of Staff. I remember when that happened, my dad was absolutely shocked. He thought he would never see that day. And then my father-in-law, my wife's father, also did 30 years in the military and retired at Fort Lee. And so, General Powell was somebody that we grew up idolizing as, just a stand-up type of individual. And he proved that in the political world. He proved to be everything that both my father-in-law and my father thought. And so it's a sad day for us. We lost a giant, but his impact will carry on.
Yeah. Ms. Navarro, your thoughts about the loss of Colin Powell today?
Very similar. It was one of those moments that, when I saw it being reported, I gasped because it does feel like a family member. It's, his legacy. For so long, we all looked up to him as a role model, being a general of such stature, being an African-American. And so it was surprising to me. I mean, I knew that he was ill. There had been some reports, but it was just surprising. And it just feels like, a chapter is closing. But he also embodied this notion of, you know, politics and civility. And that to me was another piece of the sadness. It was that, you know, things have changed so much in that space. And people like him were state, you know, he was a statesman, and he was somebody that carried the name of our African-American community, our communities of color, you know, at a very high level. So, yes, it's a sad day. Definitely.
Well, let's get to why you're here, both of you. Mr. Baker, why do this? Why run for governor?
Well, you know, I think as we were talking about, you know, General Powell and you know, his, you know, his what he meant to this country, and his shining example of someone whose parents, you know, were immigrants that came here and made it through. You start thinking about where we are at this inflection point in our nation and in our state. I think for me, you know, having been like everybody else, a quarantine witness to us getting to this point, is that, you know, I felt that I couldn't sit on the sidelines, you know, given my experience as a legislator, as an effective county executive, and given where we are with the problems of the state and the nation, to not be able to use those, you know, years of experience to try and put us on the right path, to deal with some of the very critical issues that we're facing. It's like, you know, health disparity. Just think about it. General Powell died from COVID. We've known for a while now that, you know, disparities, especially among Black and brown communities, has been out there. COVID just highlighted that. Racial unrest, the fact that Black and brown communities and many communities throughout Maryland have seen their wages shrink, have seen their ability to sustain a business. And so I wanted to bring the skills that I have to help solve those problems. You know, I think it's a matter of leadership and being able to reinvent ourselves as a state and as a nation, and I want to be part of that.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking to Rashern Baker, the former Prince George's County executive who is now running on the Democratic ticket for governor of Maryland. Also, his running mate, Montgomery County Council member Nancy Navarro. If you have a comment, if you have a question, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. They are taking my questions as well as yours. I have plenty, but let us see what Chandrika from Suitland has to say. Hello, Chandrika, what's on your mind?
Hi, good evening. I wanted to ask, I'm a teacher in the state of Maryland, Mr. Baker, and I wanted to know what your goals are for education in our state. Of course, you know that educators everywhere and school systems everywhere are suffering major shortages. Some of that in part to, you know, some areas of low wages for bus drivers, for example, teachers just kind of being overwhelmed and not feeling like they get paid enough and not feeling, you know, worth it with all of the things that are on our plate. So I really want to know, what goals do you have for our state to solve these problems for education? And what other things do you plan to do to make Maryland an attractive state for people to want to come here and teach our children?
Mr. Baker.
No, I think that's a very, very important question, and it's something, one of the things I'm proud about as county executive is we were able to raise our teacher's salary up during the time there, but clearly not enough to where they should be. So, you know, we're going to get money in from COVID relief from the federal government. That's going to help us raise our salaries for teachers throughout the state. But we also have to, you know, look at, it's not just the teachers in the building or the principals, it's the entire staff. So you talk about bus driver shortage, that's throughout this state. And so for us to be able to give our bus drivers, you know, a living wage, being able to take many of them off contract workers to make them permanent so that they have health insurance and things like that to be part of what we do as a state. The other thing is, it's not just inside the building. We need to make sure that we're actually providing, and this is something we started in Prince George's County, and I think we can expand it throughout the state. And that is making sure that we have healthcare workers in our school system, not just making sure every school has a nurse, but also we have social workers there, that we're actually providing a holistic approach to our education system. One of the things that I fear is that, you know, with so much money coming into the state that we think is just about money, it's not. It's about the quality of life for our educators and our administrators, making sure that they're valued the way they should be valued. And as governor, that's something I will personally be invested in. You know, one of the things I said is I want to meet with every superintendent in the 24 jurisdictions in the state, but I also want to visit all of our schools around the state. That's something I did as county executive, and to give a real feel for what's going on. And so that's one of the reasons I'm excited about running with Nancy Navarro. I first met her when she was doing amazing work around K through 12 education in Montgomery County, and actually having an impact on the state. So I think both of us put public education as top in our priorities.
Jean-Drica, thank you so much for your phone call. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Max, calling from Prince George's County. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hey, good night. You guys are actually a breath of fresh air for the state of Maryland, and I'm hoping you guys become governor, first of all, because I've been following your career over the years. But my question is lead towards gun ownership in the state of Maryland. As far as a law-abiding citizen in Maryland, from what I've gathered, if you have a home invader, you almost have to survive an attempted murder to be justified in defending yourself. Are there any plans on modifying that law to protect law-abiding citizens who are carriers of legal firearms to protect themselves?
Well, certainly, we want to make sure that the laws are enforced appropriately. So if you have you know, a legal right to carry a gun, which people do, and that's part of their Second Amendment, and you have a right to protect yourself in your home. What we want to make sure, though, is that we don't have the situations that you see in Florida, where somebody is fleeing the house and then they get shot or something like that. So we just want to make sure that, you know, that our laws are faithfully executed, and that those who have a right to legally carry a firearm and to have it in their house, that they can do that.
Okay, fair enough.
Okay. Max, thank you so much for your phone call. We are talking to former Prince George's County Executive Rushurn Baker. He is running for governor. Also, his running mate, Montgomery County Council Member Nancy Navarro. If you have a comment or a question, give us a call. So let us talk about some issues that are local as well as national issues. And this has to do with voting. And in reference to, is Maryland, and more specifically some of its a more heavily populated communities, Prince George's, Montgomery, and other places. Is Maryland ready for a rush to the polls? You know very, very well that there have been problems with enough polling places and information about where you go and where you're supposed to vote. For a statewide, what are your thoughts about addressing that issue?
Okay, I'll let Councilman Navarro take the first crack at it, and then I have something to say.
Sure, you know, we are very vigilant with regards to what you just described. So I happen to chair the committee, Government Operations and Fiscal Policy Committee, that has oversight of the Board of Elections in Montgomery County. And we have pushed very hard to make sure that we can take advantage of the early voting sites that have been authorized by the state of Maryland and actually push the envelope to make sure that we could add additional early voting sites, even though we have to pay out of our own pocket. Because when we're looking at the census data that has just been released, we see where there's been quite a growth in the county. And we also realize that, of course, the growth is of communities of color. so important to make sure that we provide every single opportunity and provide the resources. Now, it has been, you know, it has been a little bit of a struggle because the State Board of Elections, because you have a governor that's Republican and is majority, of course, Republican, you know, you have to advocate and make sure that these particular polling sites have the resources and that they are located where they need to be located, thinking about, you know, access to transit and things of that nature. So,
Councilmember, I hate to interrupt you. I've got to take a really quick break. Please don't forget your point. I'll let you finish on the other side. Also, we'll have Mr. Baker continue. Tawana, also calling from Fort Washington, we're going to talk to you next. We will continue with this conversation with gubernatorial candidate Rashurin Baker, as well as Lieutenant Governor candidate Nancy Navarro for the State of Maryland. The Daily Drum will continue in just a few seconds. Stay with us. Welcome back to the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2 and 98.3 FM. This is the Inside segment. I'm Harold Fisher. We continue our conversation with former Prince George's County Executive and Maryland Democratic gubernatorial candidate Rashurin Baker. Also, his running mate, Montgomery County Councilmember Nancy Navarro. If you have a comment, if you have a question for either of them, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Ms. Navarro, please continue your point.
Thank you. So, you know, to conclude, what I will say is that it is so important to push the envelope as much as possible. And I can say that, you know, here in Montgomery County, we have done that. But it has taken quite a bit of advocacy from the community and from elected officials to the State Board of Elections to make sure that they would allow us and that they would select the sites in areas where we understand that we need to have a lot more access. So I am hopeful, but again, we have to stay vigilant, and I'm super grateful of how the community and advocates have come forward to ensure that we're ready for the next election.
Mr. Baker.
Yeah, I totally agree with what Nancy has just said, and that is, if you look at this, that we don't have draconian laws in the state of Maryland to prevent people from voting. But what has happened under this administration, under the Hogan administration, is they've denied the resources to the local level to do, one, the training for workers inside our polls, two, to educate voters on where their polls have been changed to before the election. One of the last things that I did as county executive was to team up with County Executive Ike Leggett to pressure the state to give us more resources to do this training. So we're relying solely on the localities, whether it's Prince George's County or Howard County or Eastern Shore, Western Maryland, to handle this. That's not the way it has been traditionally. I know that because I served on appropriations in the 90s, and the Board of Election came under our budget. It's something that, as governor and lieutenant governor, that we're going to fight hard to make sure that everyone, especially as the demographics change in our state, that everyone not only has access to the ballot, that they are educated as to where they vote, how to use the voting machines that are there, and that we expand the opportunities to get more people to vote and not limit the number of people who have an opportunity to vote.
Speaking of changing demographics and population, as I'm sure you are aware, the Prince George's County Council on tomorrow is going to take its first vote on redistricting District 3, that College Park, Riverdale area in Prince George's. There was a protest today in College Park. A lot of people really unhappy about that. They feel that they were blindsided after the redistricting commission or panel made the recommendations. And, of course, this is now heading for its first vote. Your thoughts about that, Mr. Baker?
Well, you know, I think the process is working the way it should. I noticed that, yes, there was an issue in Prince George's County around redistricting, as they always are. Throughout the state around redistricting. The same thing in Baltimore County. I think the main thing that we want to make sure is, one, that we're making sure that communities that have heretofore been left out and shortchanged don't get shortchanged. And I think that's the message we want in any of the redistricting in state. So whether it's Prince George's County or Baltimore County or Montgomery County, we are changing as a state, and that's just a fact of life. It is the most diverse state on the East Coast. And when we're factoring districts, we have to make sure that that's factored in also. So, I think as long as the process is transparent and people get a chance to voice their opinions, that's the main thing that we can do.
Mm-hmm. Let me go back to the phone lines, 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Tawana calling from Fort Washington. Thanks for hanging on. What's on your mind?
Hi. I wanted to speak out about two things. I can put it all together. One is the funds that were supposed to be used for schools and the roads in Prince George's County, that was under your administration, and that I heard did not happen. It actually was put in a fund, and the only people who actually are utilizing it now is Baltimore City. And another part is about the southern part of the county. What are you going to ensure that the county is evenly distributed different things as far as places to shop and eat? I live on the southern side in the Fort Washington Italian area, and it's we've never been able to get anything there. Like they're building up other parts of the county. So what are you doing to ensure, your constituents that things are going to change, that it's evenly distributed throughout the entire county?
And I think, Mr. Baker, she may be talking about funds for the casino or from the casino for education.
Right.
You know, that was
right.
a big issue in under your administration.
It certainly was. I mean, the casino actually is probably one of the few industries during the pandemic that actually brought in revenue, to the state. And the caller is absolutely right in this respect, and that is the casino itself is a statewide project. So a lot of the funding goes to the state, and it filters back to the county in terms of state resources coming back. But here's where I'd like to, alleviate some of the concern the caller may have, and that is the portion that the county got from the casino actually went into the county coffers. So the raises that we saw teachers get in this past, few years, that came from the money from the casino revenues to the county. The first part of the 210 expansion came from money from the casino. Now, it wasn't going to be enough to finish all of these things. Certainly, we should do more. But I think the point is we want to make sure that resources from the state gets back to the localities, especially where they're getting the most most of the revenue is coming from. I can assure her the money that came from, MGM did not go to Baltimore. It came to Prince George's County. It still comes to Prince George's County. That was part of the deal that facilities located in your jurisdiction, you got, 30% of those revenues, and that is happening now. Now, how that's distributed around the county is up to the county executive and to the county council. When I was county executive, we set aside a percentage of resources, and I think they still do, for the southern part of the county. And so rest assured, resources are coming here from the casino. That doesn't mean that we don't need to expand our commercial tax base throughout the county and throughout the state, quite honestly. We need to do that, which is why you saw things like Tanger, MGM, which created jobs, more expansion of shops in the southern part. And so we are paying attention to every part of the county. In fact, the county executive just the other day did a big announcement, or will do a big announcement next week, on a job center that's opening up at Tanger. It's going to be one of the first of its kind in the state. And so we are moving forward. But here's the part that I think the county executive would tell you and council members will tell you, and I certainly will tell you, and that is you have to have a partner. It just can't be Prince George's County, just like it just can't be Charles County. You have to have a governor that understands that if we're going to expand our economy, if we're going to make sure resources get back to localities, that the governor has to play a part in that. When Governor O'Malley was there, that happened. Under Governor Hogan, it didn't happen. And what I tell people, and I'm sure this is something that Councilor Navarro would agree with, and that is when you come from the local jurisdiction, when you come from local government, you understand that you have to have a partner at the state level that understands we have to invest. So when the county invests money from its $50 million economic development fund, we need the state to do a $200 million economic development fund so we can put, you know, expand 210. We can put a metro line across the Woodrow Wilson Bridge, and we can expand shopping opportunities even more in this part of the county. Mm.
Tawana, thank you so much for your phone call. Speaking of Metro, Ms. Navarro, I'm sure you're aware of the news today, the report that was issued by the NTSB related to the 7,000 series Metro cars, some 60 cars now off the rails. And the report from the NTSB is there have been some 52 derailments since 2017, and that Metro officials did not tell the NTSB about any of them. And as we have heard, year after year, Metro has been coming to the jurisdictions, Maryland, D.C., and Virginia, for more money and promising that things will get better. What?
Yes, that is
I mean, that, yes. What?
Yes.
Your reaction to that?
Oh, very concerned, especially because, as you just stated, you know, I'm a member of the board of the Metropolitan Washington Council of Governments, and you know, we all work together, especially the big jurisdictions, to say yes, we need to work together on a fund. We need to make those promises. We also need to make sure that the federal government is able to put the resources necessary. It's such an important component of our economic development, of making sure that working families can get to work. You know, all of those very important policies. Directives and priorities. And so to read this, it was just very, very disappointing and very concerning. And so I know, you know, the board has a lot of explaining to do, and we cannot afford not to continue to invest in maintenance and in the quality of our metro system. I mean, it is the lifeline. And we saw how important that was as the pandemic began to subside somewhat and people began to go back to work, that is only going to become more and more of a need for us to rely on. So it is very concerning for us in the region specifically, but no doubt such shock given the fact that large jurisdictions have been stepping up and putting in the funds necessary to address the issues that the board itself identified where needed. So there's a lot of explaining to do for sure.
Also, Ms. Navarro, on the issue of public safety, more specifically crime, and I'd like to have Mr. Baker address this too, but I'll ask you first. As you are aware, the issue of carjackings in our region has hit Montgomery County particularly hard over the past several years. An issue that you've and the rest of your fellow council members have been, you know, forced to address as a lieutenant governor, as a statewide officer. What do you think might be your solution for this problem that just doesn't seem to want to go away?
Well, first of all, you know, I will be working, of course, very closely with Rashern on devising a policy and agenda and figuring out how to address this. There are a lot of root causes, and it always goes back to the notion of, you know, do we have the available number of jobs necessary for people? That has been a concern for us. We understand that there are connections to that, that, you know, a lot of people, especially now with the pandemic, as we've seen a rise specifically with the pandemic as well, people have been really hit hard. The other issue that for us, I know in Montgomery County, is something we're looking at very carefully, is recruitment of police officers and making sure that we're able to have the number of police officers that we need. That has also been a challenge, just like it has been in many other areas of the workforce. But there is a combination of factors, and this is what our police department is telling us, and the leadership there, is that, you know, there are issues with people struggling financially. There are issues with making sure that we have enough police officers, especially in our communities of color, in making sure, of course, and this is something we're very mindful, that we're balancing all of this with this notion of ensuring that our police department is a police department that it also adheres to the best, you know, practices and protects our communities. And so we've been really juggling all of these areas of need. And this is something that, again, I think in terms of statewide policy and approach, it's going to have to be all of the above, but we cannot ignore the root causes. If you do that, then you're just literally trying to play catch up all the time.
Mr. Baker, your thoughts about dealing with crime in the state?
Well, I think, you know, I think that, Councilwoman Navarro is absolutely correct. If you look at how we're going to solve this problem, it's not going to be solved just by the local jurisdiction. You know, when I came into office in Prince George's County, not only we have a rising homicide rate, but we also were leading the area in carjacking. It is not something you have to just accept. We actually were able to reduce it, reduce carjacking. And the way that we did that was, one, we put together a joint task force of not only Prince George's County and our local police, but also with Washington, D.C. and in Northern Virginia and Montgomery County. But we was led at the state level. The state police came in and they were heading this effort, because it's twofold you want to go after around carjacking. One, it is the professionals who do this and take cars out of state. So you need the task force to go after those individuals and those crews that are doing that. The other is, as Ms. Navarro said, and that is there are a lot of impact coming out of, we found this in the county, that, you know, folks were, especially young people, were doing this in terms of, you know, not having the resources at home, not having, you know, adequate jobs, not having actual transportation to employment. And so we went at it two ways. One was to get to the root causes of why folks are doing this, and the other was to stamp out those who are doing it as a criminal enterprise. But you can't do either without the state. And that is why, as governor and lieutenant governor, we're going to be working with Prince George's County and Montgomery County and our partners at the federal level, so the U.S. Justice Department, our U.S. Attorney for Maryland, to go after and make sure we're stamping out not only carjacking, but we're dealing with homicides. Whether those crimes are going up in the Washington region or in Baltimore City or Western Maryland, you're going to have a very active state public safety group that's going to be working with the local jurisdictions to make sure that no part of Maryland is unsafe.
Mr. Baker, I'm sure you heard about Governor Hogan saying that he wants to implement a $150 million plan to refund the police. And this speaking against the movement to defund the police by activists and the like. What are your thoughts about what the governor said?
Well, you know, my thoughts, first of all, is just smoke and mirrors. Here's the guy that's been in office for 8 years. We just want to talk to the governor. That has not helped, at least the 4 years I was, you know, county executive. Not once did we get assistance from the state in terms of funding our police department or helping with body cameras, which he easily could have done. So none of that. So now he talked about defunding. I was more worried about him defunding us than any movement. The second thing is he just misses the whole notion of what's going on at this time in our nation. there's a way, and we did it, and we showed it, and they did it in Montgomery County, where you can reduce crime, but also reduce arrests. You know, we cut our homicide rates in the county by 50% over the years that I was there. But we also reduced arrests. And the way that you do that is you do two things. One, you need to make sure you adequately fund the police department, but you don't need to put all of the funding in that. In fact, when we saw homicides going up, we didn't increase the budget for the police department. We actually increased the budget for health care, both behavioral health care and mental health care. We increased the budget for education. We increased the budget for training returning citizens, those who are coming from our jails. And we invested in community, real ways. And that's what is a long-term strategy. But we couldn't have done any of that if we didn't have the assistance of the governor, and that time was Martin O'Malley, to come in to help us with technology, with police, you know, state troopers, allowing us to use their helicopters to come here so that we were looking for a person committing a crime. We had the resources of the state to help us out. That would be more worthwhile than this whole, you know, smoke and mirrors about I'm going to increase it now after, you know, on my way out.
Mm. What are your thoughts about the $2.5 billion surplus that Maryland is enjoying? That's something the governor also spoke about a couple of weeks ago. Other than the refunding, the police plan was noncommittal about what else to do with that surplus. What do you think should be done with it?
Well, first of all, I'm not surprised that he didn't have an answer on what to do with the surplus. You know, we have so many programs around the state that have been underfunded for years. First and foremost is our education system. It didn't take us a pandemic to realize that we had children in one of the richest states in the nation who didn't have access to the internet, who didn't have a person at home that could help them with tutorials. So those children have fallen even further behind given this pandemic. And so one, we've got to invest in our education system, not just paying more teachers more, but also investing in the number of teachers that can help bring our students up to speed. We also have to invest in healthcare, which is why I'm calling for Medicare for all. The pandemic showed us that a number, especially in black and brown communities, not only didn't have access to healthcare, they didn't have healthcare. And so here's an opportunity for us to invest in providing quality healthcare for all Marylanders, you know, not as a privilege, but as a right. And so, and we've got to invest in our businesses. The people that were hardest hit were not the big corporations in Maryland. The people who were hardest hit were small businesses who got little loans from, you know, the federal government. This is a time to use that surplus to help those businesses along, to do something like what Nancy did and we, where around the metro stop, they were able to revitalize a community there. Imagine if she could have used, you know, money from the Secretary of Commerce at the state level to come in and invest in those businesses around there. That's something we understand because we saw it at the local level. And we know that there's a way that we could use, you know, this surplus that we're getting without raising people's property taxes. You know, investing in things that are going to create jobs where people are making enough where they're paying taxes into the state.
Ms. Navarro, I want to talk to you about affordable housing. The counties that ring Washington, D.C., Montgomery, Prince George's, and, of course, you know, Fairfax and Arlington, which have, of course, nothing to do with you, but being flat-footed and plainly spoken, it is an obscenity as to just how expensive it is to live in the DMV. Even D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser said on this program years ago that landlords charge what the markets will bear. And she said that probably about 4 or 5 years ago, and it was prophetic. It remains, the D.C. Metro remains one of the most expensive places to live in the country. As a you know, statewide elected officer, if you were to win an election, what might be your suggestion for addressing that issue?
Well, you know, the challenge of affordable housing production is definitely quite complex. We have been both leaders in Prince George's County and Montgomery County have been immersed in this process, specifically working with the Council of Governments, where we all vowed to work towards additional targets to produce affordable housing units around high-capacity transit areas. So wherever you might have metro stations, that's where you want to concentrate your density. But we also vowed that we were going to work very hard to ensure that these were units that were, of course, affordable. And so you have to have a menu of options because you need to engage with the private sector, but you have to incentivize that. And we've done some things here in Montgomery County. For example, the accessory dwelling units where, you know, you are able to build those types of, you know, smaller units in your lot. We made sure that we could change the zoning for that, also providing property tax incentives for the construction of high-rises on WMATA property, because we don't have a lot of high-rises in Montgomery County, for example, making sure that also preservation of existing affordable housing is really important. So when we are looking at land use, we make sure that we preserve, we don't upzone those existing affordable housing units. And so it's about taking an approach that is not concentrating affordable housing in any one geographic area, but that you're spreading around the jurisdictions. That's going to be super important, and working with a lot of partners to find creative ways for financing. But it does mean that the jurisdictions are going to have to step up significantly to incentivize this. And different jurisdictions have different needs and different opportunities. You know, Prince George's County happens to have more land available, and that's a great opportunity. Montgomery County, here, it's a lot more difficult because, you know, it's more mostly infill. And so we're looking at how we become very innovative in providing different types of housing. So step-up housing like larger apartments or townhouses, for example, which we don't seem to have enough. So this is definitely an area where there are a lot of different interventions and best practices that we have to put in place, and jurisdictions are doing that. I mean, I think that is the good news, but I am not going to sugarcoat it. It's no doubt quite a challenge for us, and we have to address it because it is part of our economic development strategy. If we don't have, you know, housing that's affordable, if we don't have transportation that is accessible and affordable and reliable, if you don't have workforce development that is difficult then to attract the companies. So this is something that will definitely be, you know, on top of the agenda for us, because it is very much connected to making sure that we have vibrancy and that we have a vibrant and strong Maryland.
Mr. Baker, in this last minute, I wanted to ask you, what is it as county executive that you weren't able to accomplish that you would like to duplicate on a statewide level if you are elected governor?
You know, first of all, that's a great question. I'd have so many answers, but if I had to narrow it down to one, it's actually a program similar to one that Councilman Navarro started in Montgomery County around her Kennedy cluster with the schools. For us in the county, it was called our Transforming Neighborhoods Initiative. The one thing I'd like to see at the state level is really just taking that concept on a state level, and that is going into jurisdictions, our most challenging jurisdictions, and we know them already around the state. We know what we're going to face there, whether it's our schools that have high dropout rates, whether it's the fact that people don't have access to quality jobs or transportation or health care. And really taking that concept of targeting, because you can't do it everywhere in the state, but you can concentrate on those areas where you need the most help. People automatically think about working with the mayor of Baltimore City, but it's also places like Western Maryland where access to jobs are few and far between, and there's a way that we can help there. So one of the programs that we started in Prince George's County that was very successful was our Transforming Neighborhoods Initiative. And over the next couple of weeks, you'll hear us announce that we're planning something similar for Maryland transport, you know, Maryland, you know, transforming neighborhoods and working with local jurisdictions. Mm.
Rushron Baker, Nancy Navarro, congratulations on your run, and thank you both for talking to us. I'm sure we will be in touch.
Thank you, Harold. Appreciate it.
Sure thing.
Thank you so much.
That is the Daily Drum for this Monday, October 18th. I'm Harold Fisher. Good night.